This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Medical News. We're about to speak to Curtis Allen, who's a spokesperson for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Welcome to Utopia Media Medical News.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Tell our listeners briefly what the CDC is and what its mission is.
Well, the CDC is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, and essentially that is our mission. Our mission is to prevent and to detect disease for the betterment of society.
So it's a premier public health agency
agency in the United States.
Okay. What we want to focus on in our conversation today is the soon-to-be-available, in fact, already available, human papillomavirus, HPV vaccine. Is that a virus now approved by the FDA and on the market?
It is approved by the FDA. It was approved several weeks ago as safe and effective. And the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which is a group of immunization experts independent of CDC who advise CDC on immunization policy, last week recommended the vaccine for girls 11 and 12 years of age, but they have also recommended it as young as 9 and as up to age 26, because the vaccine is recommended, approved by FDA for women 9 to age 26.
Okay, and the vaccine we're talking about is available from one company, Merck, and it's called
Gardasil. It is available from Merck, and I'm not sure if they've begun shipping yet or not.
Okay, say just a little bit here about the significance of human papillomavirus in human disease and how effective this vaccine has been proven in tests to be against it.
Sure. By age 50, about 80% of women will have, at one time in their lives, had HPV virus, HPV is responsible for most cases of cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is a major disease of women. The American Cancer Society says there will be almost 10,000 cases of cervical cancer next year in the United States, and about 3,700 deaths from the disease. This vaccine contains two antigens that will protect against about 70% of cervical cancers. So cervical cancer, this is a major step in women's health.
So in fact, there are about four different viruses that cause,
right.
What we're talking about essentially here are genital warts.
Genital warts and genital warts, you're correct, there are four antigens in this particular vaccine. Two of them protect against genital warts, and two protect against about 70% of cervical cancer.
Are the viruses that cause the warts different than the viruses that cause the cervical cancer?
Yes, that's why there's four antigens. Yes.
But in fact, they're often commingled, are they? In populations
the important point is that this vaccine will prevent about 70% of cervical cancers and most genital warts.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like it's a good thing, and the APIC, the
Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, right, ACIP.
ACIP has recommended that girls 11 and 12 receive the course of vaccine. There are three vaccines, right? Three doses.
You get the first dose, and then 2 months later, a second dose, and then 4 months later, at 6 months, a third dose.
And what does this course of treatment cost?
Overall, this is one of the more expensive vaccines, if not the most expensive vaccine. The three courses of vaccine will be about $360.
For the whole thing?
For the whole course, right.
Per patient. And how long is the immunity likely to last?
Well, studies are underway about the immunity, but we know it will last at least 5 years, and probably much longer than that. But, it's a new vaccine.
So it's new, so there's no one's had it for 5 years. And
that's exactly right. The studies are underway. And, there's no evidence of waning immunity.
So it may be that once in a lifetime is enough, or it may be that boosters or re-vaccination may be necessary
after 5 years.
Sometime
down in The immunity will last a lifetime.
Okay.
But again, studies are still underway to ensure that that's a correct assumption.
Okay. Now, there's been some discussion already about whether this should be mandatory for girls going into, say, middle school, or 11 and 12-year-old girls.
Right.
What's the role of the CDC in the procedures that would lead to that requirement?
The CDC is not a regulatory authority. The recommendations of the Advisory Committee on Immunizations are just that. They are recommendations. Now, they carry a lot of weight because typically we harmonize our schedule. We call it harmonized, but essentially the American Academy of Family Physicians and the American Academy of Pediatrics adopt the same recommendations.
Do you know if they have already, or they're processing?
There may be some very slight, but typically that is what happens.
Right.
And so those three organizations adopt the recommendation, which means that it becomes a standard of medical practice.
Right.
And a physician who is practicing medicine and their patients fall within the age ranges of the recommendations should be giving the vaccine. Now, that's a recommendation. The ACIP is basically saying this is a good vaccine, it is a great vaccine for women's health, and it will save lives. But now, that is a different issue than the state laws.
Right. So in other words, these advisory boards have said it's a good idea and that it's the standard of care for physicians taking care of girls of this age, but this has nothing to do with state at this point, or
it has nothing to do with
state government or schools or anything like that.
State laws are just that. They are state laws. All laws requiring school entry, a vaccination for school entries, are state laws, and they vary state to state. Some states may require a certain vaccine, and another state may not require a certain vaccine.
Right, okay.
Two vaccines that come to mind are the hepatitis B vaccine and the varicella or chickenpox vaccine.
Right.
Not all states require those. So, as I said, it is a standard of medical practice, but it is not law because we have no regulatory authority.
Right.
And in many cases, the vaccines that are recommended for children under 2 years of age.
Right.
So the standard, say, MMR vaccine or measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, you should have the entire series by age two, because that is when children are most vulnerable to those diseases, and that is considerably before they start school.
Right. So you mentioned in a conversation we had previously that the 11 and 12-year age range is not just a good for HPV, but there are some other vaccinations that might also be usefully given at that time. What are those?
There's the meningococcal vaccine, which protects against meningitis.
Right.
There's also a tetanus, diphtheria, and acellular pertussis, or TDAP vaccine, that protects against tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, or whooping cough. That is a new vaccine that protects adolescents from pertussis or whooping cough. The whooping cough can be a very serious disease in an adolescent, but it could be a deadly disease or a very serious disease in a young child.
Are young children required to be vaccinated?
Well, the vaccination for diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, which is a DTAP.
Right.
Adolescence is just TDAP.
Right.
That vaccination starts at 6 months of age. So a young child under 6 months of age would not have any protection against whooping cough. And that is when they, a case of whooping cough in a four-month-old is life-threatening.
Right. So,
and so when you give a teenager, we've found is that the immunity from the DTAP wanes over time.
Right.
It becomes less effective. And the TDAP is essentially replacing the old tetanus shot that everybody's because they're afraid of stepping on the nail.
So essentially, if someone gets this when they're 6 months old, they're then protected until
if they have the entire series, then they're protected up until it starts waning.
Right.
10 years out, or therefore.
Right. So in order to protect newborns to 6 months, you're saying it's a good idea for...
Well, yeah, I mean, but also it's a good idea to protect, you know, adolescents and their own sex, you know, own up.
Right.
Because, you know, if they develop the pertussis, it may not even be recognized as pertussis. They go home, they have a young sibling, you know, 4 months of age,
right,
pass it on to that young sibling, and, you know, the young sibling can, you know, end up in the hospital or, you know, even die.
Right. So, and the fourth in that group that 11 and 12-year-olds might...
Well, the other is influenza vaccine.
Right.
Influenza vaccine is recommended for those at the highest, you know, particularly for those at high risk, you know, children with asthma and others. But, you know, if there's an adequate supply of vaccine, it's a good idea for anyone to be vaccinated,
right,
and that's a good time for adolescents.
So reviewing the legal status of these four vaccinations that are useful for 11 and 12-year-olds, are they all in the same status as the HPV that you said?
They're
recommended but not required.
Well, they're recommended by ACIP.
Right.
But as far as, I don't know the legal status in all of the states, but again, those would be state,
right, okay,
state laws. Now, one of the reasons it's important for 11 and 12-year-olds, and while we're trying to, you know, see that the vaccines are 11 and 12,
right,
then we can, you know, get into the, you know, exact, you know,
right,
some of the other reasons is, you know, many parents kind of neglect taking their children to the doctor after, you know, 4 or 5 years of age. It's pretty well a given that, you know, the first couple of years you take a child in for well vaccinations. I mean, you know, well child visits to get their vaccinations, et cetera.
Right.
But then, you know, as they get a little older, parents really don't take their kids to the doctor unless they're sick.
Right.
Well, in 11 and 12, that is when many children are entering middle school, and it's a good time to have a checkup and see their doctor to make sure that they're healthy, that they, you know, they're not developing, you know, asthma or some other illness. So that is why a lot of these new vaccines are being recommended for 11 and 12-year-olds. Not that it's required to go into middle school, but it's a good time,
right,
to visit the doctor to make sure that there's nothing going on there.
Okay. What I want to talk about now is called the Vaccine for Children Program.
Right.
And how, tell us first what that is.
The Vaccines for Children's Program is an entitlement program basically to protect our most vulnerable children.
And how many of those are there?
And that includes those who have no insurance,
right,
those who are Medicaid eligible, those who are Native Americans, those Alaskan Natives, and then there's another group that have insurance, but vaccines do not cover. The insurance does not cover vaccines.
So as
they're also eligible.
So as a matter of entitlement, children who fall into that category are eligible for the benefits of the VFC, the
Children's Program, right?
Do you know about how many children in the country are entitled?
45% of the children in the country are eligible for vaccines for children.
Okay.
And there are over 47,000 providers who provide vaccines for children. Vaccine in the United States. That includes all state and local health departments, and most, but not all, but many pediatricians and family physicians.
Okay, now I want to bring these two strains together here, the HPV situation and the VFC situation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a schedule of vaccinations that the VFC makes available to the children who are eligible for it? And does that yet include the HPV vaccine?
Right. The Vaccines for Children program covers all recommended vaccines for children.
And by recommended, you mean recommended by the ACIP?
Recommended by the ACIP. And that includes, you know, most of the young childhood vaccines, the DTAP, the polio, the MMR, varicella, and the other vaccine,
right,
the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, the HIV vaccine.
Right.
And it also covers adolescent vaccines, such as the four we just mentioned.
Right, including HPV.
Including HPV.
That's
up until age 19.
Up until 19.
Right.
So what you're saying is that on the basis of the approval or the recommendation for that 11 and 12 year olds and people as women as girls as young as 9 and as old as 26 ought to be getting the HPV vaccine by the ACIP saying is it's now on the vaccine for children schedule and children can get it through that program.
Well, there are two things that have to happen.
Okay.
Actually three things have to happen. One is that the ACIP has to first recommend the vaccine.
Has it done that?
Yeah, they have done that.
Okay.
They did that last week.
So that's step one. That's been
step two is then they have to make a recommendation for the vaccines for children's program.
It right.
It's a separate a separate recommendation. The ACIP is the only body
right.
that can recommend a vaccine or remove a vaccine
right.
from the vaccines for children program.
So has it done that yet?
Yeah, they have done that, which makes it an entitlement program for a child. Now, the third thing that has to happen
right.
is that CDC has to contract. It
okay.
has to negotiate contracts with the manufacturers for purchase of the vaccine.
Right, now you said that it costs $360 for the course of three vaccinations. It is the three doses. Presumably, CDC will be negotiating a price lower than this with Merck?
Well, I really can't really discuss that because those are issues that are under negotiation
okay.
with Merck, the manufacturer.
So, as we speak, negotiations are underway between...
Well, not be underway yet, but they will soon be underway.
Okay.
And then one other thing has to happen.
Right.
The vaccine, the ACIP recommendation is not a recommendation of CDC
right.
until it has been accepted by the director of CDC and it is published in our MMWR report, Mortality and Morbidity Weekly report that most people will recognize from. That's where most of the news comes out every
right.
Thursday from CDC.
Right. Is that expected to take place pretty soon? That,
well,
that
it,
review
it, it takes at least 30 days and could take longer. And again, I can't presume to speak for Dr. Gerberding, and
right.
She will be making the
right.
decision along with in consultation with HHS.
Okay. So the four steps that have to happen before HPV becomes on the schedule of VFC is the ACIP has to recommend it, which it's done.
Right.
It has to refer it to the VFC, which it's done.
Mm-hmm.
The CDC has to sign a contract with the provider or providers. At this point, there's just one provider. Presumably, if there's a second, they'll negotiate
right.
something then.
There is a second that will be coming down the pike sometime in the future. I don't have a time frame on that.
GlaxoSmithKline. Is what it's going to produce going to be essentially identical to what Merck already has?
No, I think that they're only doing the two strains that prevent cancer.
Oh, okay.
So it's a two-strain versus four-strain.
And I don't know if we focused on it yet. The treatment from Merck, which is the sole company that makes this now,
mm-hmm.
Is called Gardasil. Is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the fourth step is that these Dr. Gerberding, the director of CDC, needs to review and approve a recommendation of the ACIP.
And then it's published.
And then it'll be published.
It'll become official.
Okay.
A recommendation.
And so two steps have taken place, two remain. When those are done, then the HPV vaccine will be available to that 45% of the children that are eligible for it through the VFC.
Well, it wouldn't be 45% because it is only
oh,
ready
right.
for girls.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
the 22% or something.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, how can parents, and is there a provision where children themselves can take advantage of this opportunity once it's available? What are the rules, procedures on
well,
that?
Well, what they would need to do is they would need to, contact the state health department in California,
right.
the local health department,
right.
And discuss with them the Vaccines for Children's program. Also, the state may have additional programs that would make vaccine available to some individuals.
So that the cost, is the cost of this in the CDC budget? Is there a special appropriation? Who?
It becomes an entitlement program, much like Social Security. And if it's inserted into the schedule, it becomes an entitlement.
And so the federal funds will be essentially
federal funds will be made available for the purchase of the vaccine, right?
Okay. and then presumably the children who are eligible for this are already on some database for having been eligible for previous medicines, right? Or are they?
If they received MMR under vaccines for children, they would probably be eligible, but their status may change. I mean, they've bought insurance that covers vaccines.
So typically the state agencies that handle this don't maintain a database and say, we know this person's eligible because they were here and they got the other.
There are registries in certain states,
right.
and I don't know.
So essentially, though, the initiative to do this needs to come from the parents of the girls.
Right. I mean, that's pretty much the case. With all vaccines, I think it's important, not only this vaccine, but any other vaccine, to work with your physician and talk with your physician about the vaccine.
Right.
And if you have questions, I'll certainly ask them.
Okay. Talk about the optimal time for a girl to get this treatment.
Well, the vaccine is recommended for 11 and 12-year-olds, and it can go down to 9 years of age.
Right.
If the physician wishes to give the vaccine. And it's important that the vaccine be given prior to beginning sexual relations, because many women and girls develop HPV shortly after beginning sexual relations. I just looked it up a few minutes ago
after
we talked, and it's about 30% will develop HPV in the first year after beginning sexual relations.
So, in fact, the curve. You said about 80% of women will have it by the time they're 50.
About 80% of women will have had HPV at some time during their lifetime.
But in fact, in the year immediately after first time sexual relations, 30%
will develop HPV.
And in terms of the curve of when women would get it, the first year seems to be
teenage and those in their early 20s.
Right, but it what you're saying is that the most common time of onset is essentially in the year immediately following first.
I think about 40%, over 50% will have HPV by the time 4 years after the first sexual relationship.
Okay, so in fact, if they're inoculated before they have sexual relations,
there's greater protection.
Okay.
So this is a very important vaccine for women's health. Not only does it prevent about 70% of cancers, cervical cancers, and saves, we'll save over 3,000 lives per year. It also hopefully will take care of many of those infections in those 80% of the women who will ultimately get HPV.
Right. Now, is it advisable or beneficial for women who have already begun having sexual relations to have the vaccine?
Well, it can't hurt.
Okay.
They've already developed HPV.
Right.
They should still get the vaccine if they have not. Even if they have started sexual relations.
Okay. Now, some critics of this inoculation program have essentially two arguments, and I'd like you to address them if you could.
Sure.
One of them is that kids are getting too many vaccines these days, and that it's causing all kinds of things, autism, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, and all that. What's the CDC's take on the cost-benefit of so many vaccines in general?
Well, vaccines are one of the most important things a parent can do to protect the health of their child. There are, many vaccines, but many of these diseases that we no longer see anymore killed or maimed thousands and hundreds of thousands of children not that many years ago. I think that my parents, when I was growing up, they feared polio.
Right.
In the 60s, it was rubella.
Right.
Children that were born with birth defects,
right.
And autism was one of those birth defects.
Right.
And so vaccines are extremely cost-effective for each cohort, which is an annual number of children born each year. Over their lifetime, we will prevent 33,000, over 33,000 premature deaths, and that's in 4 million children per year. But we will also prevent over 14 million vaccine-preventable diseases. And in for each birth cohort, for each, you know, children born in 1 year,
right,
society saves over $43 billion.
So in addition to the personal benefit of not being sick.
They're cost-effective.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, the most important thing is, you know, they ease the suffering and they ease, you know, the number of cases, you know, disease.
Right.
These diseases that are we are protecting against are not benign diseases. Measles can be deadly. Rubella can be, you know, cause terrible birth defects. Mumps, we just had an outbreak of mumps in the Midwest. HPV will kill 3,000 women per year.
And to make this point again, there's no additive problem if you're getting many different vaccines.
There's no evidence that there's, you know, an issue. Each day we're bombarded by thousands of antigens.
Right.
Millions of antigens.
Right.
So, you know, we're vaccinating against, you know, 15 different diseases. And so, but then on the other hand, we're also very conscious of the concern of parents. We're parents. I have children. Most of us are pediatricians or doctors. And we're advocates for children. And so we understand the concerns. I was the biggest, you know, I was terribly concerned about my children when I was young. And there, none of us would put anything into our own children if we thought there was potential harm.
Do you want to just take a second here to update the story on Thermosol and Thimerosal,
right,
and mercury and what the current
there is some concern among many people that Thimerosal may cause autism.
It's a mercury-based preservative.
It's an ethyl mercury. It's not a methyl mercury.
Oh, okay.
And there is a difference between
right.
the two mercury. Ethyl is, you know, metabolized much quicker and leaves the body much quicker than ethyl alcohol. Ethyl mercury. But the controversy is whether or not the thimerosal
right.
that was once contained in many vaccines.
Is it contained anymore?
It is the only vaccine that contains thimerosal as a preservative is influenza vaccine.
And
there are still influenza vaccines that do not contain thimerosal.
And people
so
getting
if
vaccines?
If a parent is concerned about thimerosal, they should talk with their physician.
People can get influenza vaccines that don't have it if they ask
right.
for them?
They should talk with their physician if their physician has it. Absolutely.
But what's the current state of the art on whether or not thimerosal does cause autism?
There have been many, many stories, many, many studies done in a great preponderance of medical evidence shows no link whatsoever between thimerosal and autism.
Okay.
However,
right.
we understand that there is a concern,
right.
and we're continuing to study the possibility, and we're also continuing to look at possible causes of autism.
Okay, right. So that's the story on more vaccines in general. Now, critics of this vaccine in particular are essentially making the argument that protecting women against cervical cancer by giving them a vaccine against it before they become sexually active is going to encourage them to be sexually active, and that's a bad thing. What's the position of the CDC on that argument?
There's no evidence that, we've reviewed the literature, and we've done studies, and we've looked at the literature, and there's no evidence that that's the case, that, you know, children are not sitting there thinking, well, if I have sex, I may develop an STD. And
right.
As a matter of fact, most kids probably don't even know what HPV is.
Right.
Many people in the United States don't know what it is, but it can be a serious disorder.
Right.
And so there is no evidence to back that up. But then again, you know, it's also important to recognize that the only sure way to prevent cervical cancer or HPV is to avoid sex until you're into a monogamous relationship.
With a person who isn't infected.
With a person who is not infected. So, I mean, you know, so in many ways, you know, I understand the argument, and but there's no evidence that that's the case.
Okay, now, in recent months, there's been a big controversy. You know, this was over at the FDA, not the CDC, if I understand it correctly, about Plan B and an advisory committee that said it ought to be recommended, and a lot of pressure that was raised against it on the same grounds that are being raised now against HPV vaccine, namely that anything that facilitates the reproductive health of women is likely to make them more sexually active, and that's a bad thing. Is there any possibility, or have there been any hints that a similar campaign or set of arguments is likely to derail what you've outlined as a pretty much straightforward process by which the HPV vaccine is going to become available for young girls over at the CDC?
ACIP meeting, I mean, we had public comment,
right?
And there has been, you know, there's been a lot of opportunity for the public to comment,
right?
And by and large, I would say the great majority of people that we have talked with welcome the opportunity to protect women's health through this vaccine. There has not been a tremendous amount of controversy about the vaccine.
Okay.
I think many people recognize that it is a vaccine that can save lives and prevent suffering.
So are you saying it's unlikely that a similar wave of public sentiment is likely to derail the process over at CDC?
We haven't seen a wave of public sentiment as you're describing.
Okay. Finally, you talked about the low level of understanding about this disease. Could you say anything you want to about why it's important that people know more about it, and what kind of campaigns, if any, the CDC has underway to raise public awareness?
Well, I think it's important that people, the more people know, the better off they are.
Right.
And particularly when it comes to their health, generally people, you know, don't know as much as they should. This is a potentially very, very serious disease, and they should know, first of all, how it can be prevented, and also, if it is not prevented, how it can be taken care of.
How can it be taken care of?
Well, one of the things is that through certain, you know, there are other ways to take care of the surgery. I mean, not surgery, but I mean, you know, HPV.
Right.
But also it's important that women continue to have pap smears.
Right.
Pap smears have reduced the number of cervical cancer cases over the years tremendously.
Then the HPV vaccine is augmentation, is a complement to, not a substitution for,
right,
pap smears.
Right, complement to and not a substitution for, because still 30% of cervical cancers are not protected against.
Right.
You know, this vaccine does not protect against those 30%.
Right. Okay.
And also, it's important to note that 50% of women who have been diagnosed with cervical cancer have not had a recent pap smear. So, you know, it's important that women continue to get their pap smears, continue to see their health care providers, and get the vaccine.
Okay. Now, if a person is a young girl whose parents don't know about this and don't seem to care about this, are women themselves able to approach healthcare professionals under the Vaccine for Children program? I say it's the women and program for children.
That's one of the issues that are being looked into, and I would suggest that they talk with the local health department, because, again, many states have different rules and regulations.
So a 15 or 16 year old, or a 12 or 11 year old whose parents aren't showing any interest in taking care of this, could if she were well informed, take care of it herself?
I don't know. It would depend on the location. But, you know, our first thing we would say is that it's important that parents be involved in their children's health.
Right. Exactly. Of course. Is there a general rule that would require parental consent?
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know.
Okay. Beyond, you know, that would involve a legal question.
Okay.
I don't
All right.
Know
just one last question. over the last two decades or so, arguments have been made that medicine doesn't pay enough attention to women. How does the whole question of HPV vaccine and the research effort for it and all that we've been talking about here relate to that that complaint?
Well, I don't know how it relates to the complaint, but I do know that this is an important step in women's health. And ultimately, it will improve the health of women.
Okay, good. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on Etopia Medical News.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, bye.
Bye.